You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Christine Buckley, and this is Field Talk, a podcast produced by the Ecological Society of America. In Field Talk, we talk to authors whose papers have been published in three of the Society's journals, Ecology, Ecological Applications, and Ecological Monographs. In today's installment, I caught up with Dr. Michael Wise, postdoctoral researcher at the University of Virginia. His paper in the December issue of Ecology explores the causes behind a bizarre morphology displayed in a species of goldenrod. Dr. Wise explains how this morphology is unusual, both in its structure and in its timing.
Well, when most goldenrods emerge from the soil, actually all of them when they first emerge, the apex of the plant is pointing straight up. And that's what we call the erect morphology. But after about 3 weeks, there's usually a minority of the plants will start to bend over. And after about a week, the apex is pointing straight down. Those are the ones that we call the candy cane plants. They really do look a lot like little candy canes growing in the field. And then after about a month, the apex starts to straighten back up. And by the time the plants are flowering, the erect stems and the candy cane stems are pretty much identical. This happens starting about mid-May through mid-June or the end of June. And this, perhaps not coincidentally, occurs the same time that the plants are susceptible to attack by some very common herbivores, gall flies. They're in two different families of insects, but they both form galls. And the apex of the plant, I like to picture, say, eating asparagus. I mean, my favorite part of asparagus is the growing tip, or the apex. It's usually more tender or more nutritious, but the most important thing about the apex is that's where the apical meristem of a plant is. And the apical meristem is the growing tip. It's where the cells are still undifferentiated. It's really like stem cells in animals. The cells can become pretty much anything, well, anything that the plant wants to make. But importantly for the gall flies, they can take over those meristem cells, and they can sort of trick the plant into making something the plant wasn't going to make by itself. And what it makes is a gall, and the insect larvae will feed inside the gall. The gall provides them food and also provides them protection from the elements.
Dr. Wise also noticed that the herbivores seem to take their time finding a good spot in the plants. He observed that the goldenrods, both the candy cane and the erect morphologies, were riddled with tiny pinholes around their apex.
The Erosta gall flies, what we call the ball gall flies, seem to be looking for just the right spot where in the meristem, where the cells are, the biggest concentration of cells that are most likely to form a gall.
These gall flies will puncture the apex with their ovipositor an average of 3 times before finding a satisfactory spot. These telltale signs left behind by the flies provided a metric for assessing the vulnerability of the two different plant morphologies. In studies both in the field and in an experimental garden plot, the researchers found that the goldenrods with candy cane stems were less likely to be ovipunctured than their erect cousins.
Picture a population of goldenrods, just a large collection of stems on a roadside or in an old field. And if they're looking, well, it seemed to us that it would be harder for them to find the candy cane stems, or at least the apex would be hidden.
The fact that flies might find the erect stems more easily than the candy cane stems led Wise to name the phenomenon ducking, much like an animal would duck to get out of the way of something coming at it. But this term makes it seem like the plants are actually behaving, an idea that's not normally associated with plants and can stir up some controversy.
For a long time, been sort of anathema to call what plants do behavior, that's sort of in the realm of animals, which have brains and neurons and are conscious of what they're doing. Even though I think it's become a lot more acceptable to say that plants behave, this ducking is really a metaphor. It's more accurate to say it's a morphological adaptation than a behavior. Plants, I would argue, do behave. I mean, they'll respond to stimuli in their environment. For instance, they'll grow towards light, and that can be a behavior stimulated by light. It's a very slow behavior, and it works by growth rather than quick movement. But there's some very rapid behaviors that plants can do. So, for instance, if you picture a Venus flytrap closing very rapidly around an insect, that is really a behavior. It involves action potentials, just like nerve cells, or very similar to nerve cells. What probably happened in the evolution of goldenrods and maybe other plant species as well, is that there was a mutation that caused asymmetric growth in the stem, and that caused the apex to bend. And the plants probably ended up correcting that because it would be at a disadvantage to them to have their apex pointing downward. But it just turned out that having this bent morphology was selected for because perhaps it made them more resistant to herbivores that attack the apex.
Since the candy cane morphology confers a survival advantage to the plants that display it, it's difficult for Wise to explain why it occurs in only a small proportion of the goldenrods.
That's really the big question. If it's so beneficial to these plants, then why is it always seem to be a minority of the plants that are doing it? Only about 3 to maybe 20% of the stems will participate in this ducking. It gives them about a 50% advantage in resisting at least two herbivores that can be very damaging to the plant. So why don't all of the plants do this, or why don't the majority of the plants do that? So there's something that must be constraining the evolution of them. The most simplest thing is there might be some cost to the candy canes for their bending their apex. Maybe the candy cane stems, most simply, maybe they make fewer seeds, or maybe they can't compete for light as well during the ducking. It's also possible that the candy cane stems are actually more susceptible to other species of herbivores. Goldenrod is attacked by dozens of species of insects. Not all of them attacks the apex, and maybe a candy cane stem is more susceptible to herbivores that don't feed on the apex. And then one of the most logical costs might be is if you're a plant who's ducking and none of your neighbors are ducking, then it's easy to hide among all the erect or non-ducking neighbors. But if it gets to a point where most of your neighbors or even all of your neighbors are also ducking, then there's probably no longer an advantage to ducking. Yeah, luckily goldenrod grows just about everywhere. It's throughout the United States, and also it's been introduced in Europe and many places in Asia as well. So I'd like to keep working with the goldenrods. I mean, again, the big question was why is the goldenrod morphology always in the minority? But also there's still a lot of really basic questions. We don't know physiologically what causes the stems to bend when they do. So I'd like to be able to identify the hormone differences that might be involved. Maybe there's some environmental cues. And also we don't know about the genetics of this. So maybe it's a trait that's controlled by a combination of the influence of lots of genes. Mm-hmm. It could be what's called a quantitative trait. There are other species of goldenrods that are closely related to Solidago altissima that we've seen have the same stem dimorphism with erect stems and candy cane stems. In particular, there's one called Solidago gigantea, where it seems to be the reverse is true, in that the candy canes are actually more common than the erect morphology. So it'd be interesting to see if there's a difference in the herbivore community that they're interacting with. We've done some preliminary experiments in the greenhouse looking at different frequencies, actually just two different. One when candy canes were 15% of the stems, and one when candy canes were 85%. Thinking that when they're 85%, they would not have as good an advantage as they did when they were in the minority. And what seems to be happening is that when they're mostly candy canes, the erect stems stick out like a sore thumb. They're even more susceptible to being attacked.
Even as a field biologist, Dr. Wise admits that the most exciting part of his research doesn't come in the field, but for him, it occurs in the lab.
I find just figuring out what plants and what insects and other animals do for a living to be endlessly interesting. As far as being exciting, I'm a very mellow person, and I think that if you observe me doing my work in a field, you wouldn't say I look excited. I'm certainly interested. But once I tend to do very large experiments with lots of individuals, and I spend lots and lots of time taking data, so a lot of it is very tedious. But once I end up entering the data in the computer and start making graphs and start doing statistical analyses, that's when you actually would observe me getting excited about the work. Usually I'm alone, so nobody observes me getting excited, but that's when you might hear me from down the hall.
That was Dr. Michael Wise, a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Virginia. His paper in the December issue of Ecology is titled, "Ducking as a Means of Resistance to Herbivory in Tall Goldenrod, Solidago Altissima." I'm Christine Buckley. Thanks for listening to Field Talk, and happy holidays.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.